long as it does?
No, it's very different because a couple of things happened. Previously, people said that there was no right to do this. Well, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has said, no, you have a right to carry a gun outside the home for self-defense. That's a very big deal. The other thing is that for the last 4 years since the Heller decision came down, we have heard from anti-gun groups that Heller only applied to having a gun in the home. Today's decision clearly breaks that line of thinking and says that the right to self-defense extends beyond the four corners of your home.
What are you expecting now from the General Assembly if they've been so reluctant?
The judge gave the General Assembly 180 days to act or else there would be a permanent injunction entered against the law. That means that if the legislature fails in that prescribed time frame, then they will that the law will be unconstitutional, and then you can carry any firearm down the street with nothing more than a FOID card in your pocket.
This does still keep the FOID card process. Nothing along those lines changes.
No, nothing about that part changes. But the failure by the legislature to act would mean that we would have a de facto constitutional carry right within the state. That no extra permits, nothing more than a FOID card, no extra training. We have 102 state's attorneys and a lot of law enforcement agencies that would have a very big problem on their hands.
How do you see this panning out? I would look at it and say, hey, maybe the legislators are going to try and at least put a lot of restrictions.
I think the anti-gun groups and some legislators may try that, but they are now in the very big minority. Remember, we had 66, 67 votes on a carry bill in the House last time. That means they don't even have a simple majority to enact their type of restrictions. So with that, we know we have a majority, probably a supermajority, going into the new General Assembly in the Senate. It's not going to happen. We will block any attempt at an overly restrictive bill that mimics California, New York, Hawaii, Maryland, New Jersey. Those are all unacceptable.
So what do you want this to look like then? Can you give me a vision of the concealed carry law that you're hoping for?
Look at states like Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, any of those states that have reasonable carry laws that make it, do not place an undue burden on law-abiding citizens who try to obtain a permit or a license.
As somebody who's not familiar with, what do those laws look like? What else do they have that makes them good models?
They recognize generally accepted training courses. They have, moderate restrictions on the places you can't carry a gun, such as grammar schools, secondary schools, police stations. I think there's a norm within some of those bills or laws about what's acceptable. I think that when people want to put undue hurdles and obstacles in front of people by saying you have to have 40 hours of training like a security guard or a private detective, that's not the issue here. The court has said you have a constitutional right to have a firearm outside the home for self-defense.
All right.
We are going to demand that the legislature respect that right just as they do the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and others.
I know there have been other cases floating around. Is this one?
You had a woman who had carry permits issued by two other states who could carry in 30-some other states who was barred by state law from carrying a firearm outside her home for self-defense, and she was beaten and left for dead, and she chose to file a lawsuit saying the state's complete and absolute prohibition on carrying a loaded firearm outside the home was unconstitutional. And today the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals agreed.
Are there any of the other cases that are going through the system that could override this in any way?
That would be kind of tough to do because outside of the Moore and Shepard cases that were decided today, all of the other cases deal with states that have a very restrictive may issue permit. So we are the only state in it. Illinois can't have nothing. And now it goes to the legislature.
Finally, what has made Illinois the outlier for so long? It has come to this, come to taking a matter to the federal court. What is special about Illinois that it was the one state that did not allow individuals to carry guns?
Chicago.
What about Chicago? Obviously, the state's biggest city.
We've had anti-gun hysterical mayors in the city of Chicago on this issue for the last 20 years. Maybe the new mayor will be a little bit more pragmatic about the situation he finds himself in.
That was National Rifle Association lobbyist Todd Vandermeid speaking with Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says she is reviewing the opinion. Her office could try to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. The fracking fight has come to the Golden State. Federal officials are auctioning new oil leases in California today. The drilling technique known as hydraulic fracturing or fracking has opened up energy reserves that were once inaccessible. But with the new interest from oil companies in California comes the heated debate that's taken place here in the Midwest and elsewhere over fracking and its potential impact on public health and the environment. From NPR member station KQED, Lauren Summer reports.
Southern Monterey County is California wine country. Vineyards stretch for 40 miles along the highway here, about 2 hours south of the Bay Area. But it's not exactly Napa Valley.
I wouldn't say we do a high volume of foot traffic.
Kurt Galnick is walking through a field of Chardonnay at Scheid Vineyards, one of the wineries here. This area grows more Chardonnay than Napa does, he says. What it lacks is the name recognition Napa has and the visitors that follow.
This is something that we're trying to change now. We do have very scenic areas in Monterey County.
But lately, more than what's on the ground, people are talking about what's under the ground, oil, and plenty of it. Some of the oil leases up for auction this week aren't far from this vineyard.
Very deep under the land here is the Monterey Formation, which is shale that has oil reserves in it.
That oil is notoriously tough to extract because it's locked inside the shale rock. Recently, though, oil companies have gotten a lot better at getting oil out of shale. They inject millions of gallons of water mixed with sand and chemicals underground. That cracks the shale rock, letting the oil out.
Right now, I think there's a bit of a gold rush mentality concerning shale oil.
Don Gauthier is a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He says fracking is nothing new in California. It's been used for decades.
What is new right now is that the price of oil is reasonably high. This technology has become very sophisticated. So these explorationists are justifiably optimistic about the idea of being able to get out oil that couldn't have been accessed just a couple of decades ago.
California's shale oil resource is huge, an estimated 15 billion barrels in the Monterey Formation. That's bigger than North Dakota's oil reserve, where recently there's been a drilling boom.
There is absolutely a danger of California being transformed almost overnight.
Cassie Siegel is a lawyer with the nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity.
In other parts of the country, we've seen contaminated water. We've seen people who live near oil and gas wells complaining of health effects.
Whether that's specifically caused by fracking is under debate in many places. But Siegel says it's enough to be concerned, which takes us back to Monterey County. Her group is suing the Bureau of Land Management over the oil lease sales, saying the agency has failed to review the risks of new fracking techniques.
They are acting as if nothing has changed in the oil and gas industry, but of course everything has changed.
The red that you see on the map there is the federal mineral estate.
The Bureau of Land Management's Rick Cooper says the government is offering these leases because of interest from oil companies. But his office is predicting minor environmental impacts because it doesn't foresee much new drilling.
We haven't seen the development signals as of yet. But if we begin to see increased development, it would be at that time that we would pull back and say, well, we probably are going to have to do more analysis.
Well, certainly our members are exploring how effective hydraulic fracturing is going to be in California.
Tupper Hall was with the Western States Petroleum Association, an industry group for oil and gas companies. He says fracking could boost the state's oil production, which has been declining for two decades.
If hydraulic fracturing proves to be as successful here as it's been elsewhere, it's an extraordinarily optimistic future we're looking at from an energy point of view.
Hull says there are a few things left to figure out. California's geology is challenging for large-scale fracking. The shale layers are messy, bent by seismic forces. Those forces are also a concern when it comes to disposing of fracking wastewater underground, which can increase the risk of earthquakes. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Summer in Monterey County.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of December. 2012. It's the birthday of Patrick O'Brien, born Richard Patrick Russ in Buckinghamshire, England, 1914. Best known for his 20 novels, historical fiction set in the British Royal Navy, the early 19th century, starring the naval captain Jack Aubrey. The first book, Master and Commander, published in 1969. Patrick O'Brien, a private, methodical man living in a secluded French village, wrote 1,000 words a day and avoided personal interviews. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Language is like a cracked kettle on which we beat out tunes for bears to dance to, while all the time we long to move the stars to pity." Gustave Flaubert, born in Rouen, France, 1821, a perfectionist, he said, "I spent the morning putting in a comma and the afternoon removing it." His masterpiece, Madame Bovary, appeared first in serial form in magazines, the story of Emma Bovary, a doctor's wife, who longs to experience the passion and excitement she has only read about in novels. It's the birthday of the painter Edvard Munch, born in Luton, Norway, 1863. Lost both parents, two of his siblings, to tuberculosis. Another sister went mad. Munch said, "I inherited two of mankind's most frightful enemies, the heritage of consumption and insanity. Illness and madness and death were the black angels that stood at my cradle." And from that he gave us his famous painting, The Scream, in 1893. Had a nervous breakdown in 1908, ended up in a sanitarium, gave up drinking, managed to get some tranquility in the second half of his life. But, Munch said, "Without anxiety and illness, I am a ship without a rudder. My sufferings are part of myself and my art. They are indistinguishable from me, and eliminating them would destroy my art." And it's the anniversary of the opening of the world's first motel. It was called the Milestone Motel, later the Motel Inn. It was in San Luis Obispo, about halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco, a string of bungalows where you could park, created by a developer named Arthur Heinemann. Here's a poem for today by John Daniel, "After the Wedding," for Marilyn. After the white balloons were swept away on the wind that had swallowed